Welcome to Yarning Disability, the FPDN podcast. I'm your host, Bernard Namok Jr. I'm a proud St. Paul Badu and Caribbean man from the Torres Strait. And I'm also the son of the designer of the Torres Strait Islander flag, Bernard Namok Sr., and an advocate for the First Peoples Disability Network. Join me now on Yarning Disability as we showcase First Nations people living with a disability, as well as their families and carers, and other industry professionals.
Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are warned that the following podcast may contain the voices and names of people who are deceased. The First Peoples Disability Network and the producers of this podcast recognise the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders past, present, and the future leaders of tomorrow. FPDN would like to acknowledge our founding elders and their lasting legacy, Uncle Lester Bostock and Auntie Gal Rankin, and acknowledge all First Peoples living with a disability.
And just a heads up, the following conversation may contain some coarse language. Hello, my name is Bernard Namok Jr. I'm an advocate for the First Peoples Disability Network. Today, I would like to acknowledge my late father, Bernard Namok Sr., the designer of the Torres Strait flag, which was first launched on today's date to the people of Xenarthkes, Torres Strait, 31 years ago. I also pay respect to my elders, past and present. In this week's episode of Yarning Disability, I had a yarn with founder and CEO of Full Black Group, Kainat Wano. Kainat is a Xenarthkes man from the eastern island of Murray and the founder and CEO of Full Black Group, based in Meanjin, which focus for equality, inclusion, and advice around NDIS. Bala Kainat is also a gifted motivational speaker, and he took me on a journey of learning and understanding.
Hello, my name's Kainat Kiripo Wano. I'm from the Kuwait village, and also Arab people of Mer, Murray Island, of Xenarth, otherwise known as Torres Strait. I now live in Brisbane. I'm a father, a grandfather, a great-grandfather. I'm also a sibling to two other Balas and many other brothers and sisters. And I live in Brisbane. I choose to live in Brisbane. I've created my own business, the Full Black Group, which also runs a disability service under NDIS services. But I also provide NDIS community development, which is looking at how we develop our communities to support and advocate better for our mob with disability, because we are marginalised even more than the mainstream disability sector, not just in the physicality and geographic location, but it's also in the philosophies and the applications of treatments. So that's me, and that's what I do, and I'm a lifelong advocate of social justice, fairness, access and equity. My bala is in a, my old bala too is in a wheelchair. I've already taken my office block. I've taken my office block to task over their inaccessibility. Mm. And I had the CEO from Sydney ring me because I advocated to the point where I wasn't backing down, and we now have a mandate to assist to, they've now called on George to assist them now make their building more accessible. They apologised. I now have to access, and this reminds me, I've got access, I can get $30,000 from an organization now to for my business to make George, because he's my office manager, to make his transition to work more better. So I can get office equipment, I can assist with renovations to the bathroom, and now this company now want to partner with me because I've challenged them. It's called the WOTSO group of companies. They're an international company. Shared office space. But I took them on. I just refused to, because he couldn't use upstairs kitchen. I said, why am I paying full rent when these other staff members, including myself, I can walk up there and access a full kitchen. My brother can't. Like, it's just not equitable. Debated anyway. I went straight to that. So I ended up dealing with the CEO direct. The regional manager, pay level scales, didn't cut it. They could not compete against my debate. And he got to the point, had to go to the boss lady. We started knocking heads. Next minute, sister says, hey, when you come to Sydney, come for a coffee with me. And I'll have a cake too, please. Another kind of man too, I advocate to a point of, I advocate my background. I'm at an age where I don't look it, I know, but I'm 60 next year. So my 60 years of age, I'm sort of finding myself spiritually generating into that level of leadership, which, because all my old people are dead, only me and my brother now, me two are now. He's 64, I'm 63. I'm 59, 60 next year. All them grandkids, nephew and nieces, they look for me too. And so what's come with that is I've found in the last, say, 5 years, my voice has got more clout. I've always been loud and noisy, but I find my voice now has more clout. So when I advocate for my big brother, it comes from a place of status of where I am in terms of my life, and my ancestry. And I choose to walk on this earth in a ad advocacy role, not just for family, not just for Zenarth mob, not just for First Nations mainland, but for everybody, access and equity. So I have that mindset when I go sleep nighttime, I wake up in the morning, that's my mindset. So I now work in the disability sector, which NDIS, I own a company, Full Black, Service for Disability, and I've also got the forensic NDIS. So now I'm working in the justice systems with our children and our adults who are incarcerated, and their offending behavior is based on disability. They have a disability. So instead of going to the justice system to recycle and regenerate them as having a lifetime cycle of offending behavior, I'm now transitioning them to a healthcare cycle of NDIS. And my bala, what's happening is they are now readdressing their behavior because they are getting the healthcare they need, or in that process of shaping that healthcare, because we don't know what that healthcare need is, but it's through trauma. It's the disability sectors from because if you Bala, if you look at globally, not just this country. Now I've done research. I'm now affiliated with the University of Queensland and also the Wesley Research. Now these organisations, when I say affiliated, we are now consulting each other because we are now in the process of linking up. Because I've now managed to influence them to look at how we treat our disability sector. So UQ, University of Queensland, Allied Health School, and Wes, I just had breakfast with her this morning, actually. I raced in my coffee shop here in Brisbane, just around the corner, 3 minute drive. I've just come home here, set this up for this thing. Now, the research now around this is around recognizing colonization as another layer that comes with disability. But I'm not going to sit here and whinge and say, sorry, ask black folk. No, I've found a solution to it through my therapeutic practice. And the evidence is I have two major institutions in the white man's world, the Wesley Mission Mob and the University of Queensland, Allied Health School, have now got evidence that what I've provided and done as a business, as a company, has now impacted and changed lives of clients and patients of their people. So I didn't have, they chased me, I didn't chase them. The alumni out practicing have now fed back information that Kane at Wano and his program with these children who are their clients, they've seen improvements in what, 3 months, 2 months, that they haven't seen in four years. There hasn't been a change. I've got parents now writing and my testimonials from parents are text messages they've sent me, sometimes 8 or 11 o'clock at night, amazed at what their children are doing, amazed the children are going to school, amazed the children are now wearing shoes to school. I got deputy principals now ringing me saying, what are you doing? This boy who's been here since grade 5, he's now in grade 10, he's turning up to school and he's participating in the classroom because I'm applying additional supports of disability because there's the colonization has given such a, it's another layer of disease. It's a disease, it's an illness, which isn't catered for when you talk, when you go to a psychologist, when you go to a OT, their westernized concepts don't even touch on, not only on the colonization impact, but on the history where our people come from. Now, my law therapy, L-O-R-E, law, and I've now got First Nations law therapy. And people might say, who are you, man, for making a thing? Well, who I am not to do it. I have a grounding. I have a bloodline. I have an appreciation. Plus, I work on my law system. Because I want to say something controversial here. Law is bigger than culture. Law is bigger than culture. And this isn't just for Zenuf people or for mainland Aborigines, mainland First Nations. Law is a global personal development system. Law. L-O-R-E. I worked for the United Nations for 2 years in 2008 and 2009. I was based in Miami. I know Miami. Tampa Bay, Florida. The Canadian government seconded me to go across there. And I was working with First Nations, North and South, Canadian First Nations, Pacific Island First Nations, even the Sami people. There was about maybe 80 to 90 of us. But when we come in that room, we were connected. And it wasn't our cultures that connected us. It was our sense of L-O-R-E, our law. That connected us. I know some about Sami culture. I know some about the Navajo culture. I know some about them. But the table that was spread to bring along that brotherhood and sisterhood is the table of law, L-O-R-E. And the only person who judges that, who keeps balance on that, is the person themselves. You wake up in the morning like I do. I wake up 3 a.m. in the morning. That's just me. 3 a.m., my brother. I get up, I thank Amen Baba. First and foremost, Eso. I wake up. Then I think about, okay, what did I do yesterday that I can do better today? Because I made mistakes yesterday. How can I be kinder? How can I make sure this place is better? What can I influence? I'm practicing a sense of loyal ORE. I know there's people out there, our own countrymen, who say, oh, yeah, emi no sabe culture. Well, I doubt anyone would, because that culture has been contaminated by colonization anyway. Who gives someone the right to determine who's got culture and who hasn't got culture? But your own personal choice. I don't go home and I know some of my countrymen that dance and they might have culture and they might have a go at me for not having culture. Then they go home and they bash their wife. They go home and they bash their children or neighbor, whatever, or violent, or whatever they do. But it's up to them, blah. But the thing is, I'm working on myself to become a better human being. This is what law. That's what sustained cultures, way of living. The culture is there, but the law em set the mark. You take away this one, boom, culture disappear. What we're seeing today is culture disappearing because colonization has done that. We have lost our sense of law. Not just this country, global, it's a human study. When I talk like that, these universities, they're jumping over themselves. They want a piece of it. So that little preface there leads me to my practice in the disability sector. We are now seeing outcomes from 60-year-old men who have been diagnosed and have been, inflicted by in brain injuries, who sit at home and just watch the, may watch television or just not get involved in their healing, who are now wanting to go for walks by the water with other men and yarn, who now want to go to physios, who now want to exercise. And the children and the grandchildren are saying, I saw for this one was my dad was slowly killing himself. But now we've ignited the law. We have now ignited the obligation for that old man who has an obligation to his children and to his grannies, law. So I've now put that into a therapeutic practice. And it also connects. It connects people. I've now working with six young people in detention centres or under child safety, not child safety, under youth orders. What they want to belong. They want to belong. So, colonisation, the background, and it's not the family's fault, it's not their grandparent, it's no one's fault. When colonisation, that evilness, that ulcer, that cancer you become, these are the symptoms. But we can heal ourselves. So I'm not saying that someone's gonna who might have a disability get up and walk, but it's about well-being. We need to the baseline is well-being. You get a baseline of well-being. And whatever your physical capacity, no matter what your physical capacity, you will have a quality of life in terms of your life experience. You can look out the window and think, oh, look at how green that tree is. Instead of looking at the window and saying, oh, look at the dead grass there. Oh, look at that gray sky. Whether you're in a disability chair, if you can't walk, if you can't sit up properly, or if you can walk and you can sit up properly, we still look out of the same window. What determines what we see is your level of well-being. Now, well-being comes from the self-governance of law for you, us. Now, I've got to substantiate this, but I was yarning with the researchers, head of research, this morning, and I made a statement to say chemically, our DNA is structured in law. Now, the human body, daddy boy you, daddy boy me, your mother, my mother, they are the first generation that is still connected to our ancient past. It's just that sociology, I can talk about that in a spiritual sense, but the white person is scientifically developed that when someone's colonized, it takes seven generations before the physical, emotional, spiritual, I'm throwing that in, spiritual DNA disconnection happens. Seven generations. So trauma. So for seven generations, I'm only the second generation, I believe, or third generation. So I've still got some DNA properties relating to my ancestry bloodline. So what I'm saying there is that my therapy now taps into that. And when you talk about the First Nations with this country, Esau, Bala, we're talking 65,000 years. The oldest living, surviving people on the planet. And the reason, when you think about it, when you think about all them tribes, multiple tribes, nations over this country, I'm in admiration of that. Because how do they survive so long without conflict? Because they all had different culture. The Jabbagai mob, were you there now? It cares, Jabbagai. The Waka Waka, the Kwandamuka, the coastal people, the Pitjantjatjara. Different cultures, they live different environments. But what do they share, my bala? They share L-O-R-E. Boom. Mic drop. I rest my case, Your Honor.
Yeah, it's speechless.
I am starting a global movement. Law wisdom. Law. My bala, I speak you. And I admire you too, just quietly, and your father. I follow you. Don't worry. We're going to become friends on Facebook just recently. But You have big shoes. You have big shoes. Big shoes. And whether, you know, I just admire you, Karidat. You, Karidat. And intention here. But the first word that come into my head, my bala, is that you carry the flag for your dad, bud. Your dad. You carry the flag. And this one, obligation blow you, your law, L-O-R-E. You mother, I speak you now, my brother. I read what you said there on Facebook. And I know the lady in question. But Bala, your law governs you. You know, answer for anybody. I am with you now. It's the first time I met you. Carly, CJ talks very highly of you. And we call you your bestie, your buddy. I see you on the red carpet, all these functions. you do character. But your law, Bala, you got it. You can tell when someone's got law. Because it's not something that's finished product. It is a work in progress. And you, another language we can use is good person. It's good person. Not everybody got good person. Because the good person, but you, me, for Zenaf people, is the good person below the mainland First Nations, for the Northern Hemisphere First Nations, the other Southern Hemisphere First Nations, they got their own good person. They got their own word. Because we're different cultures, but it relates to the same set of fundamentals. Now, grabbing all that, putting it into a therapeutic practice for the disabled sector, there's a GP now there's a general practitioner, a pediatrician of a kid's doctor who has used the word miracle. Miracle. I'm not saying my name to that miracle. I'm saying the law practice has created a miracle. They have to do re-diagnosis because someone, a child that wasn't speaking, had a diagnosis of silent selective mutism, has flipped the coin, has baffled medical science. Because I've just tapped into something that is 65,000 year old in the making. The vibrancy of law. She's now connected to it through my practice. There are kids now turning up to school. We have kids now wearing shoes for the first time in their life. We're talking grade four students who wake up and want to go to school, want to accomplish, not living to the expectations set down on the negative. But going back to the disability sector, we need to create a window, not a window, the view out of that window, the well-being. We need to connect people to law. This gentleman I'm working with now, he was slowly declining because he didn't want to go out for exercise. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to do his, even his GP, he went to his GP, but he's now he can't, we look after him. He now texts, hey, am I going to go to this thing? His children are thanking us. But I don't think they should thank us. They should thank their family, their law, the principles of it. And once we apply that, you know, we can change the world because, you know, like I said, culture, you know, is a way of life and how we live, but law determines how we choose to live. And well-being, brother. Mm. And, you know, the reason I share a lot of things, like I'm a coach too. I call myself a wisdom coach. Because I'm now at a stage in my life where I can look back. I'm not saying, I'm all this. It's a learned process as you go. But the thing is, a lot of the things I talk about is it happened to my life. I'm supposed to be on dialysis. I'm 59. I'm 59 this year, 60 next year. I'm supposed to be on dialysis. I decided I'm not going on dialysis. 18 months ago, I was turned away from the Royal Brisbane Women's Hospital specialist. They said, I don't know what you've done, Kainat. You don't need to be on this specialty list. I'm supposed to be on dialysis. My big brother's on dialysis. I'm supposed to have gout. I don't got gout. My liver's no good. The GP, 2000, it was during COVID actually, I went to an appointment in 2020, before we were locked down, had the bloods done, and then we were locked down and had a phone consult, and she said, oh, my God. Her words were, oh, my God. And I thought, what do you mean? Am I going to die? She says, Kainat, your liver has recovered. What are you doing? So we can heal ourselves. But I'm not saying, please don't think. I just know my life is I'm 59 years of age. This is the best I felt physically, emotionally, spiritually, I felt in my life at 59. And I bring that into my therapeutic service for the disability sector. And like mm-hmm. I say, it might get people to walk from a wheelchair, but it certainly gives them, when they look at that window, hey, which way that bird that sings so sweet? Which way that grass is green? Well-being. And who knows? One day they might be able to reverse their diagnosis. But that's, in a nutshell, I don't know where this yarn was going, but that Mumotago, because that whole process of disability, because we've got to lose the the indoctrination of white medicine. We are fearful from white medicine. We are frightened if we don't do this and do that, we're going to die. Well, we probably will, but at the same time, start thinking about your own self and your law. I've given up, you know, I have a few drinks, alcohol, I admit. I gave it up for 7 years. I have a few drinks, but I don't drink soft drink. I don't eat KFC. I eat fish and chips. I choose what I eat. I don't like all fatty things. For breakfast, I used to eat rice in a stew for breakfast. I was 125 kilo. I'm now 103 kilo. My fat ratio has declined because I choose that I don't want to fit the expectation of a 60-year-old Indigenous man as being old, have a big belly, and like just lie around. No, I don't want to, because it's expectations. I exceed the expectations. And so in my therapy, like with brother that I'm looking after and these children in the disability sector, they've been set an expectation by their medical doctors. And I said, hey, not believe them one. Miracles can happen. Miracles can happen. One other patient said to me, oh, I'm going to be 60 next year. He's in a wheelchair. He said, I'm going to be 60. And I think that's about Bala. He was a First Nations mainland man. He said, brother, that's going to be it for me. I think I'm going to die. Because that's, I said, no, you're not. No, you don't. No, you don't. I said, 70 and over. I worked with him for about 2 days. And then he jumped on Facebook and he put on Facebook, he said, hey, people, exceed expectations, because that's the same thing I told him. Exceed the expectation. He's now telling others, because he's now the lads, he's functioning. He's now 64. So it's the mindset. But it's also the mindset's driven by the sense of law, L-O-R-E. That's the thing that kept us strong. So therapeutically, we need to be a lot more, our vision needs to be extended past the westernized concepts of health, well-being, medicine. We come from strong grassroots people who have law, and that connects us globally.
And lastly, like if somebody is going through, like somebody, family or person living with a disability are going through like a hard time in their life, is there a message that you want to say to them?
Yeah, but look, my message to anyone going through an issue with disability or barrier, or even anyone who may just be struggling with their own. I don't think you need to. I think we all share, everybody shares a lack of self, because this world has developed a very ugly system of who you are as a person. And it can very quickly marginalize or make you feel like you're on your own. And if you've got a disability, that's even another layer. So we all have mental demons to play with, and you're a human being, whether you're black, white, or brindle. This world has shaped a system where too competitive, and those mental barriers can be beaten by a strong spiritual barrier. And what I say there is that we must spend time, when we work, people work out. People work out all the time, work out. I've got to go to the gym, I've got to walk, and it's good. That's 10%. 90% of your time should be spent working on yourself, working on your self-belief, working that you come from proper strong bloodline. And whether you're a Christian or not a Christian, working on that sense of belief in faith. I've seen my mother change things through mind application of faith. I call it faith. Some people call it affirmations. I'm now living affirmations. I predicted I was doing this thing, what I'm doing now, when I was 35 years old, I remember. So my advice to people is that sorting out all these barriers like we imprison ourselves with. And the thing is, because when you walk out your front door, you're bombarded by labels. You're bombarded by people, and people call your names. Well, the thing is, forget that. You only walk in your light. Walk in your light. Then all of a sudden, you develop an immunity. You develop a mindset. Don't worry. Like, I still have a mind. Because the reason I'm saying that is because that's what I've done. I've done it. When I was first 5 years of my life, 6, 7 years of my life, we were hiding in under beds at North Ward in Townsville because that white man coming to sell encyclopedia or washing powders or Reader's Digest, the door-to-door salesman, my mother thought that was government come to take us. She would say, government, government. We'd go and hide under the bed. And the older boys girls had to go and hide up in the trees, the mango tree in the backyard, because our parents, our aunties, our big sisters were frightened. Government come to take us. So that fear, that trauma, I've managed to flip it. Because I've applied, everything I've said today is what I've applied in my life. And I'm just sharing it. I've flipped it to the point now, that now drives me every day I wake up. That history, that trauma is to make sure that I influence a world that I can influence so that doesn't happen again. And that's my obligation. That's my law. I choose that law. Nobody else chooses it. I choose it. I will monitor it. I'll measure it. And I only have myself and myself and my God to answer to, no one else. Boom.
I really enjoyed our yarn, and I must say, I left feeling very, very inspired. You can check out Balakane at Wano's website at www.fullblack.com.au. If there's anything you heard in today's episode that raises concerns for you, there is help available. You can contact 13YARN on 13 92 76 or Beyond Blue on 1300 22 4636 or Lifeline on 13 11 14. Thanks for listening to Yarning Disability. I'm your host, Bernard Namok Jr. Follow FPDN on our social media accounts to stay up to date with future episodes and information. You can also visit our website at www.fpdn.org.au.